Welcome to Crosstalk Bullhorns, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. I think we all can agree Donald Trump wants to see the conflict in Ukraine come to an end. He says he has a plan, but as time passes, that plan is unclear at best. Also, European leaders say they want to replace the U.S. and NATO. Is that even possible? To discuss these issues and more, I'm joined by my guest, George Samueli in Budapest. He's a podcaster at The Gaggle, which can be found on YouTube and Locals. And here in Moscow, we have Dmitry Babich. He is deputy foreign editor at Komsomolskaya Pravda Daily. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. All right, let's kick it off with George in Budapest. Week after week, George, we talk about the Trump peace plan. And week after week, different pieces come to fore. We had Steve Witkoff did a long interview with Tucker Carlson, and he, in his mind, and he is the special envoy for the United States to represent Donald Trump. The elephant in the room, as they say, is territorial changes. Well, that may be the case here, but that's not what Russia's interested in. So week after week after week, we hear what the administration is possibly negotiating with the Ukrainians, but doesn't seem to be a lot of negotiations with the Russians. Am I wrong?
Well, it's very hard to say, Pete. I mean, the fact is that clearly the United States position has shifted very dramatically since Trump's ascent to power. And in that interview with Steve Witkoff with Tucker Carlson, and where they talked about these, he talked about the four oblasts and Crimea, it seems like the Americans are very conciliatory, that they're basically going to, they're very open, really, to giving Russia what Russia wants on that. NATO membership, if it's clear from what Witkoff said, that's off the table. It's not even up for discussion. The part that is very problematic, I think, however, is that the United States hasn't given up on continuing to arm Ukraine, and the United States hasn't really given up on some kind of bilateral security arrangement that is going to make with Ukraine subsequent to that. That is unacceptable to Russia, and that's really what started the whole thing, because even if there's some concession are made on issues of territory and on issues of NATO membership, then it still comes along as if this is Minsk III. And therefore, this would not be acceptable to the Russians. So what the Americans are now doing is this piecemeal ceasefire process. So, okay, we can't get the 30-day universal ceasefire. So let's have a 30-day ceasefire when it comes to the attacks on energy infrastructure. Well, let's get a 30-day ceasefire on attacks in the Black Sea. So that isn't going to get us very far. I mean, that's clearly what Trump and Witkoff are saying. Well, we'll go step by step. We'll have these interim ceasefire until we get the big ceasefire. That isn't going to do it until you address the real problem.
Yeah, you know, Dima, the focus, you know, even though we have the Americans have a special envoy, apparently expert groups are being assembled and whatnot, the focus still is on the bilateral relationship, the U.S.-Russian relationship, and that's the other shoe that is dropping right now, because the Trump administration has made it very clear, and they've followed through. There have been phone calls been made, there have been meetings in Saudi Arabia. You know, we take them at their word because it's happening here. But improving that bilateral relationship can only go so far, as George has pointed out. While in the meantime, you're supplying American weapons and intelligence to a country that is killing your soldiers, it cannot last indefinitely, Dima.
I think if you look from the outside, if you look at the surface, everything seems to be hanging on a very thin line. It appears that it's only Trump's will, his antipathy for Zelensky, that is driving the whole process. But if you look at the root of it, I think there is more reason for hope than at the first glance. Yes, there are problems. I mean, even the way Steve Witkoff responded to Tucker Carlson's questions, you know, that cult of personality. Oh, the talk with Trump was transformational. You know, that is basically what happens after you get rid of a totalitarian ideology. There is still a cult of personality. I think these are remnants of the cult of Sig Biden, you know, that we had for 4 years, you know, when people pretended that he took decisions and that he was some kind of a wise man, even though he was a replica of Brezhnev, just repeating the same phrases, you know, pursuing the same policies. But what we saw during the last week is that the alternative is terrible. I mean, the alternative suggested by the European Union, rearming Europe, you know, $800 billion or euros of injection into the military industry, when France has a deficit, you know, state debt of $3.3 trillion, you know, Macron driving that process, the most unpopular president in French history. Come on, you know. So the alternative is so terrible that sooner or later we will get to some kind of a result, I think. And it's obvious that Trump is not aware of the problems, like his attitude. Give me your atomic power stations, he tells Zelensky. Well, what about the grid? What about the network of distributing that energy? This was all Soviet technology. Only Russia has it. But this is what happens when you get rid of a totalitarian ideology. Sometimes pretty incompetent, cynical people come to power who do not know what they have in possession now. And who...
Well, Dima, I appreciate... I mean, I'm trying to keep some embers of hope and optimism alive. Joe, the person who knows that best is George. But George, you know, basically the same question. I mean, you know, U.S.-Russian relations have improved. Now, that's not saying much because they didn't exist for 4 years, okay? But, you know, for the Russians, they made it very clear they want a overall settlement. Yes, improved relations, an end to the conflict in Ukraine, security guarantees for everyone. We're getting drips and drabs of some of it, but it's not coming into focus. You know, maybe, you know, it's five-dimensional chess and I don't get it, okay? But I think you would agree that frustration is a bit warranted at this point. George.
It is warranted, and part of it is the European problem, because I think we can agree that Russia at the outset, going back to December 2021 with the two draft treaties that President Putin submitted to NATO and to the United States, which is a new security architecture for Europe, which is obviously what Russia would desire. That's not really likely to happen given the European attitude. I mean, a Europe that's run by Kaya Kallas and Ursula von der Leyen with and this new German Chancellor Friedrich Merz and Macron, it's not going to happen. There isn't going to be a Helsinki. So the best that Russia can hope for is a new bilateral relationship with the United States. The United States clearly Now that's led by Trump, wants to improve relations. Trump has never had any particular animus towards Russia. I think he's always wanted to have good relations with Russia. And that is progress. The problem is, as we've seen in the case of the Middle East, Trump is a very mercurial person. He is now, when it comes to Israel, destroying his own peace agreement, the very agreement that he had insisted upon. And now he's destroying it for reasons that are hard to figure out. So Russia's position is, well, okay, we can work something out with Trump. Well, how do we know that Trump isn't going to change his mind and do the opposite in 3 months' time, maybe even less? And the same goes for all of Trump's ideas. Trump clearly wants to use Russia for his own ends. You know, he's got China in his sights. Yeah. He wants to somehow, you know, break up the Russia-China partnership. He's not going to do that, but he clearly thinks he can do it. And he wants to use Russia in the Middle East, use Russia to lean on Iran. Neither of these is particularly interesting to Russia. So therefore, if Trump can't deliver on a European security architecture, if Trump's plans for Iran, the Middle East, and China are of no interest to Russia, then again, Russia will turn around, okay, well, we're going to make these sacrifices. For what exactly?
And then what would be the value of the bilateral relationship? You know, Dima, I don't think enough focus has been given to the readouts after the famous second call. George and I have talked about it extensively, but mainstream media has skipped over it. I mean, they're very, very different readouts. And what, at least my interpretation of the readout is that Trump was asking what Russia could do for the United States, but not much what the United States can do for Russia. That's why my optimism is slowly evaporating. Dima.
Well, it's even clear that the language of these readouts, at least on the American side.
Well, I mean, Dima, one was, there was the official one, the Russian one, very meticulous, very official. And the American one was like a long tweet. I don't know. Maybe that doesn't mean anything. Go ahead.
I could see Trump behind these readouts. I mean, even the statements made by Rubio after that phone call, fantastic conversation, you know. I felt Trump speaking, not Rubio. But that's
well. I mean, Adima, there are those of us that believe that the Rubios and Witkoffs and all that, they're learning Trump speech because Trump likes it. But anyway, I interrupted you. Go ahead.
And after that, they criticized China for being dictatorial. You know, Confucius said that leaders should be well spoken because their subjects, the subjects, always imitate leaders. That was not the case in the United States for many years, but that is certainly the case now. They all speak like Trump. But indeed, you are absolutely right. Trump, okay, let's have no illusions about it. He wants to use Russia for his own ends. He wants to use everyone for his own ends, you know. He thinks that Russia can somehow influence Iran and it can influence China so that he would achieve his aims. That is not very good, but it's much better than the crazy ideology followed by the European Union and previously followed by Biden. I mean, as I already said in the beginning, when you have a totalitarian ideology collapsing, it's never wise, nice people coming to the top. It's always the cynics who just say, what have been we spending our money on for so many years, you know? His language is very plain, you know. They have been wasting your money, he tells the taxpayers. I'm going to put this money to much better use, and I'm going to get something from Russia, from China, from Iran. Well, he may be naive because his moves. He tells the other party what he's going to do. This is not the way.
Well, okay. I'm going to jump in here, gentlemen, and we're going to have to end this segment. We have a series of bad options, a series of bad outcomes. Well, at least at this point. Gentlemen, I'm going to jump in. We're going to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on some real news. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk Bullhorns, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Jermanji, we're discussing some real news. I'm going to throw it back to George here. With a vengeance, I would say, over the last week, European leaders clamoring, you know, what are we going to do? We have to figure out our security future without the United States. Reordering of NATO. A lot of big words from a lot of small politicians. I mean, I don't know how they get anything done. It's kind of like Elon Musk. How do you run your companies when you're arguing with everybody on Twitter all day? And the European leaders, well, they just have one meeting after another about what to do. And you know what, George? They never decide what to do. I mean, it would be comical if it weren't dangerous, because kind of an echo of what Dima said in the first part of the program. Instead of having a reassessment of European security architecture, the Europeans, or at least some of the major countries in Europe, they want to double down on Russia as the enemy, the definitive enemy, the focused enemy, and they will rearrange their entire societies and security because of that targeted target of making Russia the biggest threat to Europe. I mean, these are big words, and they're very dangerous. George.
I agree with you entirely, Peter. It's very dangerous. I mean, what they're entirely focused on right now is how do they sabotage any possibility of an agreement on Ukraine? So they started this whole talk about the coalition of the willing, sending in forces even before there is any kind of an agreement. That's the French position. We're going to send in forces before there's a deal. And now Keir Starmer, who was really the leader of this whole coalition of the willing movement, has backed away and said, well, as long as there's a deal and as long as if there's an American backup. So he's kind of trying to distance himself now from the French plan of just sending them in. But nonetheless, the German government has now gone completely, stark raving bonkers with this new plan. They're abandoning this the debt break. They did this in a very dubious constitutional way. It's the old parliament that actually, essentially passed the legislation to abandon the constitutional break. And they're going to just run up a huge debt to spend on their military and their infrastructure. This is going to absolutely damage the German economy because it is debt. And so they're going to have to start issuing bonds and the bondholders are not going to be very confident of their ability to repay the bonds. And so they're going to have to keep offering these huge bond yields and so on. This is going to cause a huge problem throughout Europe.
George, this is German rearmament.
Yes.
This is not European. I mean, so are the Germans going to have factories in Poland, in Slovenia, in Italy? I don't think so. Again, it kind of boggles the mind, okay? And Dima, George has already said it. I mean, the primary goal of this, the here and now goal, is to sabotage anything that Trump wants to achieve in ending the conflict in Ukraine. But the implications of what they're doing, obviously, Russia's going to react to it. 800 billion euro? That's not pocket change. You have to be prepared for that, all right? And so they're throwing down the gauntlet that we have a new Cold War that could actually get hot at some point. I mean, actions have reactions. Actions have consequences. Dima?
You're absolutely right. And in this program, we have been saying it many times that Russia was not opposed by any nation, by Americans or by Poles or by the British. Russia was opposed and is opposed by an ideology. And that ideology is even stronger in the European Union than in the United States. We have seen it. For many years, a lot of people in Russia simplified the problem. They said Americans are forcing Europeans into being belligerent against us. As soon as Americans get more peaceful, Europe will calm down. Nothing of the sort. Europe is now trying to replace the United States as the warmonger. And this is very dangerous, and it's very dangerous that we hear from Friedrich Merz this terrible phrase, Russia is a threat to Germany, Russia is a threat to Europe. Why is he saying that? Because there is a battle raging near Kursk. Last time, Germany was in danger because of the battle near Kursk in 1943, but it was Germany's fault that it was in danger. So I would advise the Germans to think why they hear what they hear from their leaders right now, what it can lead to.
George, is this remilitarization, or as Underlying calls it, the rearm, sounds like Nancy Pelosi peddling something. I mean, are there ulterior motives here? I mean, particularly when you have Ursula von der Leyen, who no one voted for, but now she's going to determine the fate of Europe. A German, by the way. Is this we have what's going on in Romania, threats being made by officialdom in Brussels, looking at the ADF, what we did in Romania, we can do in Germany. I mean, putting these things all together, it's very dystopian. Would you agree?
I would agree, because it's profoundly undemocratic. I mean, I mentioned the case of Germany. This debt break, this major change in German policy, was itself profoundly undemocratic. It went against the will of the German election just a month or so ago. They did it deliberately, even though the voters had clearly expressed their desire not to do this, not to go down this path. The Christian Democrats did very poorly. The Social Democrats are going to maintain their position in government. They did extremely poorly, the worst Social Democrat performance of all time. And this is what they're doing. And of course, you got what you have in Romania. You have a kind of a populist nationalist leader, clearly on track to win, last December, on track to win in May. Well, he's now been banned from running. I mean, you know, just flat out banned. And without any, no real reason has been presented. Well, what ground are you banning him other than that we don't really want him there? So what you have now in Europe is essentially elites determined to maintain their power. You mentioned earlier about how these elites, they're always talking to one another. Yet another conference, there's going to be another coalition of the willing conference, I think, in a few days in Paris. This is what they do. And so when anyone comes along and challenges them, then they just stamp it out, and even worse, threaten them with imprisonment. This is very dangerous. I think this is really profoundly undemocratic, and there's going to be some kind of an explosion in Europe. You cannot sustain this kind of a anti-democratic movement, and particularly when it comes to issues like money, and this is going to be economically very damaging, and on war. You know, you're leaving the continent to war. This formula is a formula for absolute disaster in Europe.
Yeah, because Dima, I mean, we hear from Brussels officialdom that Europe needs to be on a war footing. We have to have a remilitarization. But they're not at war. They're not at war with anyone, okay? And so what they're doing is they're moving towards a possible war. When you prepare for war, Dima, the likelihood of it happening is great.
You're absolutely right. The Romans said, if you want peace, prepare for war. But the opposite is also true. If you don't want peace, prepare for war. So basically, the European Union is now quickly losing its soft power. It's no longer that peaceful, nice continent, you know, where people get huge social benefits, where military budgets are small. No, that's going to end. And that has been ending for quite a few years now. Europe participated in the war in the Gulf, in the war in Afghanistan, in the war in Iraq, in the war in Libya. And every time it ended as a disaster, you know, and these people lecture us on how to end wars. Look at Chechnya after the war. There are tourist groups coming there and coming back in admiration. Look what happened to Libya until Europe got out of there. Now it's getting better because Europe got out of there. So it's very unfortunate, but that's the case with Europe right now. And I would solidarize with George. Merz not only deceived the people when he basically supported this ending of the tax break, borrowing break. During the electoral campaign, he said that the main threat to Europe was sovereign debt, that he was not going to increase the debts. He said it during the campaign.
Well, he's a Wall Street guy, right, George? He's a venture capitalist guy.
That's right, he's a BlackRock guy. He's a finance guy. But what's interesting about him is that he's broken with the tradition of Christian Democrats having good relations with the United States. Or in Germany, it's usually the Social Democrats who had fraught relations with Washington, but the Christian Democrats were Adenauer, Helmut Kohl, and Angela Merkel, had pretty decent relations with Washington. What he's now doing is he's openly hostile to Trump and openly infuriating Trump and pursuing policies that clearly the Americans don't want. I mean, it's obvious that the United States wants in some way, we talked earlier about whether it'll achieve it, but it wants in some way to end this war because it's a disaster for the West. Germany, under Merz, is explicitly trying to sabotage this. He wants to continue with this war. That's not only is this going against the will of the German people, as expressed in the recent election, but it's also antagonizing the Americans, something that the German government has decade after decade gone out of its way to avoid.
Well, to finish up with you, George, I mean, is this a temper tantrum, a juvenile temper tantrum? Eventually, the Europeans will realize they don't have the capacity, the infrastructure, even the people to pursue this, and relapse back into their Stockholm syndrome. I'll give you 30 seconds.
I tend to think that it is a temper tantrum. I can't believe that this has any legs at all to it. It makes for good headlines, you know, the Financial Times runs a lead story.
And it's anti-Trump. It's anti-Trump.
Exactly. They detest Trump. And they detest Trump because they detest anyone who doesn't put them front and center, the key thing, the transatlantic relationship, that's the most important thing in the world. Anyone who doesn't say that, you know, infuriates the Europeans. You know, we need to be the center of attention all the time. So, yes, but they will realize eventually they don't have the military industrial capability to replace the Americans. They're talking about a 10, 15 year plan. Well, try a 100-150 year plan.
And how many election cycles will there be in between? All right, gentlemen, I want to thank my guests in Moscow and in Budapest. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk rules.